Welcome back, everyone. Quite a bit to talk about, as seems to be the trend these days. I want to talk about some of the protests taking place across the country right now. I think a lot of it is just a psyop, I'll be honest with you. A lot of this has to do with the death of Tyre Nichols, which, honestly, if you look at the video, I think was an unjustified killing. Let's just be honest with ourselves. I even spoke with some police on it, and they're like, yeah, those officers were totally out of line. But it's being painted as a race issue. All five officers were black. The chief police is black. The head of the police, you know, kind of ethics group is black. They're making a race issue where there's no race issue. And they're trying to use this politically. And I think this is where most of the focus is. I'm going to touch on what's happening, explain kind of the agendas behind it, who's behind it, what they're doing with it, and comment a bit on that. Also, folks, Trump is beginning his 2024 campaign, and I'll be touching on some of the points that he's campaigning on. And also, you may have seen something very interesting, which has led some people to believe that what we're watching right now is a giant distraction operation because, well, actually, Project Veritas had some very interesting undercover videos where they got a Pfizer scientist talking about directed mutation of the virus, suggesting that, at least according to him, Pfizer is at the very least considering mutating COVID-19 in order to anticipate future variants so they can create new vaccines for it, a process he admits is very dangerous. All right, folks, that said, some stuff we can't talk about on YouTube, so we'll jump over exclusively Epic TV for some of that. Again, I do an hour and a half show, only about half an hour is on YouTube. But again, those of you on Twitter, Rumble, Facebook, join us on Epic TV. That is our own platform. We don't have to worry about what we say on there. It's great. We also do the live Q&As there. Be sure to join me. And that's let's jump into the first story. Let me jump into what's happening first, kind of on the surface with these protests. Epic Times had a story, and I'll show you a video of it just so you can get an idea of some of the protests taking place. Epic Times said this, protests erupt in cities after Memphis releases Tyre Nichols video. Here you have people marching in New York and they're saying end racism and so on. I'll explain a lot of this. Epic Times reports that protesters have organized in several U.S. cities on Friday night following the release of body camera footage of the killing of Tyre Nichols by five Memphis police officers. The five former officers allegedly involved in the killing of Nichols were arrested and charged with second-degree murder on Thursday after footage showing a violent struggle between Nichols and the officers was released on Friday night. Demonstrators took to the streets in different cities with various messages, some demanding justice and an end to the so-called police terror, while others with generic leftist messages about class struggle and revolution. In some locations, protests even were being led by far-left groups known as Antifa, known for being confrontational and violent during protests, according to videos circulating on social media. What are we watching here? The narrative is deeply confused. They're trying to make a race issue where race shouldn't be an issue. I should note, I did watch the video of the beating and subsequent death of Tyre Nichols. I can say, and I talked to police officers who watched it as well, it's bad. I don't want to show you it. I think it's just disturbing. But, you know, it's them beating a man, handcuffing him, beating him up, pepper spraying him. It's unjustified. Even by normal use of force standards of police, it's unjustified. And police I've spoken to, they admit that and they think it's very bad. It looks very bad. One issue you have is that, frankly, because ironically the defund the police movement, you have a lot of departments with very low thresholds of training. That's one big issue. Another big issue you have is, well, police departments are different than sheriff's departments. Sheriffs, which have to abide by the Constitution. Police departments, which answer to the mayors of different cities and abide by, frankly, whatever crazy policies the mayor wants to put out. These were police, not sheriffs. The other issue you also have, and not throwing shade on them either, the other issue you have is diversity hires and also just people not applying like they used to. The pool from which a lot of departments can actually hire from has become smaller. I don't know the history of these officers. I don't know how long they've been there. But It's bad. I know. Danielle, you're mentioning. I read three of the cops were gang related. I've read different claims on possible motives. I know people are saying this is actually possibly a personal thing between these officers and this individual. Regardless, it's pretty bad. And the impact of it is going to be this, basically. You're going to watch officers become less and less interested in enforcing the law. And you're also going to watch the crowds claim this is racism, although, again, there's no... The man who was beaten and killed was the same race as the officers and same race as the head of the police departments. It's not a race issue. The narrative they're using to try to paint this as a race issue is by suggesting that police overall, basically the entire system of justice, is racist. Therefore, the police are racist whether they know it or not. Let me show you CNN actually saying this, because this is where they're going with it. CNN reported this. Opinion: the police who killed Tyre Nichols were black, but they might still have been driven by racism. This is Van Jones saying this of CNN. He says, but the narrative white cop kills unarmed black men should never have been the sole lens through which we attempt to understand police abuse and misconduct. It's time to move to a more nuanced discussion by the way police violence endangers black lives. And further, it states, cops of all colors, including black police officers, internalize those messages and some act on them. You know, if you talk to James Lindsay, the way he describes basically the way these narratives are being used is this. You have third-party organizations like the ACLU and others who want to have direct roles in police trainings, direct roles, for example, in critical race theory trainings. A lot of police departments in the U.S. already mandate these. In New York City, for example, the mayor here, Eric Adams, he's made these types of trainings even mandatory recently for government employees. What this does is it creates third-party organizations that are not held to the Constitution or anything like that, who can dictate the narratives being preached to police officers and so on. Even some of the reporting requirements for police officers are being run by third-party organizations. For example, in some parts of the U.S., police officers, when they make an arrest, they have to state the perceived race, possible disabilities, or the gender of the people they're arresting. And of course, an officer is not going to say, I believe he was a tree person, cat being, or something like that. You know, like, you're not going to look at someone these days and know whatever crazy gender they've come up with, you know. Where they can, according to the actual doctrine, they can literally make up anything they want. No person, even if you're utterly insane, is going to be able to guess someone's like imagination on what gender they think they are these days, given how far they can take it. And so, of course, police officers are like, what do I write? It's a man, it's a woman, and this is the color of their skin. And that's basically what they do. And then you have these organizations who collect this type of data and then use it. And then you have some police officers who think it's funny, and they joke and they write just crazy stuff because they think it's funny. And then that's actually used for data, which then informs policy and so on. The budgets are affected. I think because of issues like this, morale is affected. Police officers retire early. People don't want to apply to become police officers. There's a smaller pool for hiring. And then you start running the issues where, well, you have less trained officers or more poorly trained officers or officers who don't want to do their jobs because they're afraid of going to prison for doing their jobs. Then you have a crime wave. Then you have other problems. And then you have calls to reform the police. This is basically where we're at right now. And frankly, it's because of individuals like Van Jones at CNN that we have a lot of these problems pushing for the absolute changing of the law enforcement system under the guise of the racist narrative. This is just how they're using it. The implication being that if something is fundamentally racist, the institution is fundamentally racist, no matter what you do, it's not going to solve that, right? If you're a police officer and you're in there, it doesn't matter if you're white, it doesn't matter if you're black, it doesn't matter if you're whatever, Hispanic, it doesn't matter what your skin color is. They're saying you're inherently racist no matter what. The only solution then is you need to have another organization come in and try to inform you how you cannot be racist. And the implication being with this is that they need to either change the police department, alter it totally, They're talking about, for example, community policing, which is not like how you'd think. It's not like a community of people. Community policing suggests that basically just like environmental social governance, or for example, community schooling, or for example, stakeholder capitalism, they're trying to push through the World Economic Forum. Community policing is based on the same basic idea. The police department is not solely in and of itself. Corporations, NGOs, and government all play an equal role within it. And these become the stakeholders, the community, quote unquote, who dictate the policies of it. In other words, policing is then no longer a constitutional thing. Policing is then a private business thing. And hey, as we've heard the far left say with Twitter and so on, it's a private business. It doesn't have to follow the Constitution. Anyways, that's the problem you're dealing with that, and the way that the narratives are being used. Now, critics were quick to point out some of the problems with all of this, again, noting all the officers were black. How are you trying to make this a race issue? It's a Democrat-run city. The chief of police is black. It's a majority black city, again, Memphis. What CNN is suggesting again is that you have this fundamental systemic racism, and that's the narrative. It doesn't matter what race people are. It's a narrative they're pushing, and that's it. Understand that trying to debate with them on race is actually pointless because they're not even talking about actual skin color. They're not debating skin color. They're claiming that the institutions that the world is based on, tradition, morality, policing, government, everything is built of the way the world once was. And if you want to make it unracist, you need to fundamentally wipe it out and then alter it. They're demanding an utter remaking of the legal systems, of the policing systems, of the government systems, of the business systems. And only then do they believe you can make it not racist. That's what they actually mean when they're talking about systemic racism. Now, this is also happening amid a crime wave in America. And, again, the de facto legalization of theft at retail stores, for example, of the large-scale problems we have now with car theft. In fact, in Epoch Times, our sister media entity, one of our employees was just robbed at gunpoint in Washington, D.C. I can tell you, being in New York City, I have a lot of my own personal colleagues, many of whom are Asian, who've been beaten, randomly attacked, stabbed. We had one employee, for example, who was stabbed by a man randomly on a subway train. You want to talk about race? I think every perpetrator was black because they're being fed these really aggressive racist narratives. There's a crime wave right now, and people can walk into a CVS and basically take whatever they want. In California, for example, theft, even to a certain value limit, is legalized. And I think it's terrible. I think what you have are the powers that be manipulating people, using race narratives, and pitting people against each other. Let me show you some of this where it's at. Blaze Media had this story. Democrat introduces bill to mandate armed security in every gas station, bank, grocery store, and pawn shop in Chicago. It says an Illinois Democrat has introduced a new law that would mandate armed security in various businesses that are susceptible to armed robbery. Illinois State Representative Thaddeus Jones, a Democrat, introduced the Armed Security Protection Act last week. If passed, the bill requires banks, gas stations, grocery stores, and pawn shops in Chicago to have armed security or armed employees. And you're seeing this in New York as well, where private buildings and people who can afford it, they're actually hiring their own private guards. Anyone who's gone to countries that live in relative lawlessness, you might have encountered similar things. I know myself, traveling around Latin America at different points in my life, you'll see things like this. Private security basically becomes, if you can afford security, that's what you see. I remember, for example, actually, in Los Angeles, downtown Los Angeles, a lot of businesses are hiring their own private security. It's very common now. And if you go to some parts of Latin America, you see the same thing. My dad, he was a big surfer, so we used to go to Costa Rica a lot as a kid. I remember in San Jose, you'd see outside some of the main city, outside some of the businesses, you'd see armed guards everywhere. It's people who can afford their own security. You also see this in, for example, the gated communities in some of the bad parts of Brazil. This is the way that defunding the police works. You don't have police anymore. You have private security. The problem then becomes who can afford private security? Well, I'll tell you what, every government official pushing for these defund the police movements has their own private security. Every single one of these officials is surrounded by men with guns. Well, they tell you not to own guns. All these officials who are trying to make it so that, remember, even in like California, even in New York, you have government officials who are defunding the police who are increasing their own personal budgets for private security. They're increasing their private security while reducing your security, while pushing these types of narratives. You have this taking place. Another thing here, PJ Media is saying some insurance companies in St. Louis refusing to cover Kias and Hyundais because of theft. It says major insurance companies like Progressive and State Farm are denying coverage to many new Kia and Hyundai owners due to considerable increases in theft. The massive jumps in theft from 273 to 3,958 in St. Louis in 1 year represents an increase of 1,450%, and is being blamed on a TikTok video showing exactly how to break into and drive off in many of the 2011 to 2021 models of these South Korean-made vehicles using just a screwdriver and a USB charging cable. And current Kia and Hyundai owners are seeking huge increases in their renewal premiums. Now, I will note that just doing a how-to video on how to break into a car and steal a car is not the cause of it. The cause of it is the lack of, well, the lack of the reality of repercussions. You have a lot of underage kids doing this in these major cities because they know that they will not really be charged for it. They know that they won't face any kind of major, you know, jail time or anything of the sort. And part of that has to do with the way, frankly, these programs are being, well, the legal system is being gutted. Let's just say that. And a lot of this goes back to George Soros, who is actually, who has admitted it directly. The basically create, basically getting prosecutors elected across the United States who don't actually prosecute crime because they believe that there's disparities when it comes to race. This goes back to the issue of Tyre Nichols and the way they're framing this as a race issue, right? Systemically racist. They're claiming that the law enforcement system itself is more likely to put black men behind bars. And given that, given the fact that more black people go behind bars than white people or other races, at least by percentage, right? At least by racial percentage, that they need to create equity. Equity, where, you know, if you have what, like 11% of the race, 11% of the population, I can't remember the exact number, is black, then only 11% of the prison population should be allowed to be black. If, you know, 70 or 50% of the local population is white, then only 50 to 70% of the prison population should be white. This is what racial equity looks like when applied to who goes to jail and who doesn't. And what that looks like in practice is that people who commit sometimes really serious crimes don't go to jail for it, or people feel that they can violate the law haphazardly and not face repercussions for it. George Soros is actively financing the campaigns of prosecutors who believe in this worldview. Let me show you his actual article where he talks about this. This is an archive, Wall Street Journal, in July of 2022, and this is an op-ed by George Soros. It says, "Why I support reform prosecutors." It says, "We spend $81 billion every year keeping around 2 million people in prisons and jails. We need to invest more in preventing crime and strategies that work, deploying mental health professionals in crisis situations," which I can get into, "investing in youth job programs and creating opportunities for education behind bars." I can tell you a few things on that. They want to send these basically mental health therapists or, like, you know, civil workers alongside police, for example, to domestic violence disputes. The problem you have with a police officer is the two times you're most likely to get shot and killed are domestic violence calls and traffic stops. In fact, you just had two officers killed in Southern California on those exact cases. They want to send these social workers on the most dangerous calls. Again, domestic violence disputes. And I know from talking to police officers, a lot of them are terrified of going. These are oftentimes very far-left individuals whose ideas of policing have been utterly changed once they actually get on the ground and see what that involves. When they talk about investing in youth job programs, There's plenty of jobs. I was walking to work today. They had a Five Guys burger shop offering $18 an hour. Places are hiring all over the place. It's not about lack of jobs. I was working a full-time job when I was like 12 years old because my dad had a restaurant and I had to work there. You know, it's like if you want work, you can find it. The problem is not finding jobs. It's the motivation to get a job. And they say also creating opportunities for education behind bars, which actually I agree with. I think that'd be a good thing. They say this is George Soros. He said this reduces the likelihood of those prisoners will commit new crimes after release. In recent years, reform-minded prosecutors and other law enforcement officials around the country have been coalescing around an agenda that promises to be more effective and just. The agenda, which is what he's pushing for, includes prioritizing the resources of the criminal justice system to protect people against violent crime. It urges that we treat drug addiction as a disease, not a crime. Well, you know, why aren't they closing the U.S.-Mexico border where 100,000 Americans died of fentanyl overdose in a single year? I don't think he actually means what he's saying here. Why is he bankrolling these open border policies and flooding the country with drugs if he actually cares about this? Right? But he says that we treat drug addiction as a disease, not a crime. What he means by this is you don't prosecute drug dealers. You don't prosecute people selling drugs and killing your kids with drugs. You treat it as a disease, which means you just let it go, basically. Or maybe you buy them crack pipes like they're doing in, you know, through the Biden administration. And it seeks to end, he says, the criminalization of poverty and mental illness. What does he mean by ending the criminalization of poverty and mental illness? It has never been illegal to be poor or mentally ill. What is he talking about? He means mentally ill people or people who don't have money who then rob or kill or harm other people. You don't basically prosecute them is what he's suggesting. And he says some politicians and pundits have tried to blame recent spikes in crime on the policies of reform-minded prosecutors. And he's claiming that the research says otherwise, that these reform-minded prosecutors are doing good things. And then George Soros states this exactly. He says, this is why I have supported the election and more recently the re-election of prosecutors who support reform. I have done it transparently and I have no intention of stopping. And it's because of George Soros and other people, but you know, because of his bankrolling of these individuals, that you have basically prosecutors who are letting like three-time felons off on misdemeanors who then go and reoffend and kill people. There are people dying because of people like George Soros. In fact, I one of the recent cases in Southern California involved that. A police officer, it was a sheriff's deputy, went on a traffic stop, went to a window of a car, and the man pulled out a gun and shot the officer in the head and killed him without warning. The individual who killed him was a three-time felon who should have been behind bars but was let off twice by a bad judge, one of the same types of individuals who George Soros has been backing, the same type of reform-minded, you know, law enforcement person. People are dying because of George Soros. And again, unfortunately, the narratives that people like Soros are pushing for rely on kind of a collective of fake news reports. What you see is basically kind of how disinformation functions. It uses a collection of half-truths or, you know, half-truths. For example, there are more black people than white people in prison, that police are more likely to, for example, shoot and kill a black person than a white person. Actually, that's not statistically true. They're actually more careful, funny enough. Basically, these lies work as the footnotes in bigger articles. These collectives of half-truths work as the footnotes in government policy. These collectives of half-truths work in the footnotes of data collected by individuals like George Soros that they go and actually form policy, form campaigns, form political movements, and form media narratives. And this collective of half-truths used as the footnotes of these broader arguments are actually what we're being just flogged with constantly. And I'll say one thing, you know, for example, news agencies are again presenting these riots as being peaceful, a half-truth. Let me show you this. Lauren Chen made this joke. Basically, you had CNN talking about, you basically right now have people reporting on how There's these rioters lighting police cars on fire, breaking things, and so on. And they're saying it's mostly peaceful. And Lauren Chen's pointing to this former CNN report of the Kenosha riots, saying, you know, it's fiery, but it's mostly peaceful. Nothing to see here. This is a peaceful riot. Yeah, people are being killed. Yeah, they're burning and looting, and you know, look how peaceful these riots are. This is it's not a violent riot, obviously. Don't believe your lying eyes. Yeah, I'm being tongue in cheek, of course, but this is the way legacy news outlets are framing it. The problem with how they frame it is that the memory disappears, and all that's left then is the narrative. Once people forget what actually took place, or if people, for example, don't even think for themselves and they just listen to whatever the legacy news outlets say, the narrative of the legacy news outlet becomes the record of history, and the record of history is what is then used to inform policy. The record of history is what is then used to inform education. You see where I'm going with this? These news outlets are altering reality. They're altering the perception of reality using lies. And most of this also is being carried out by professional rioters. I've said it before and I'll say it again. A lot of what we're witnessing is not like, and this is where I think the kind of communist agenda of class struggle or manufacturing racial struggle, it really comes into place. There are people trying to pit us against each other. They want white people to be against black people, and they want black people to be against white people, because it's that conflict, right? That dialectical conflict that lets them create change or create policy or try to manipulate things and change the trajectory of society. They want us to hate each other. They want white people to, you know, not trust black people. They want black people to not trust white people. That is the way that critical race theory works. Critical race theory based on critical theory from the Frankfurt School. Again, taking the idea of the proletariat versus the bourgeoisie, which was the Marxist narrative. Taking that and applying it to every single dialectic. Every single grouping of opposites. Men and women, again, where you have gender. Critical gender theories, children and parents, I mean, race, every political group, they want you to fight each other. That's where, again, you get into critical race theory or just critical theory, which is the broad narrative they have for it. And the problem with this is, well, this, frankly, most of these rioters are like white socialists. They're not black Americans for the most part. Like it's mostly white socialists carrying this out. And I saw the same thing actually in New York with at least the early stages of the George Floyd riots. I think later on it did become more organic, and you actually did have a lot of people who genuinely believed in the narratives. But in the early stages, I remember reporting on it, and you look at the placards people were holding, and you'd see that they had the same exact designs, the yellow and black, which actually you see right now as well. And on the backs of them, they'd have like, you know, Democratic Socialist Party. They'd have the name of the socialist organizations they were part of. In other words, they used to put on the backs of these, you know, big boards they were holding, the names of socialist organizations. Currently, a lot of these attacks, a lot of the riots, they're being done by Antifa. This is not your black neighbor. This is not your black cousin or whatever. This is Antifa. And they're trying to make it look like black Americans are burning down communities. That is not the case. These are extremist groups, really extremist groups. Let me show you videos again. It's white liberals. It's not black Americans for the most part. It's white liberals, most of whom are like socialists, using, again, the same basic design I showed you before, I talked about before, and I personally witnessed, that had Democratic Socialists of America written on the back of it. These are people calling for socialist revolution. Let me show you.
No justice!
No peace!
We say no justice!
No one's free in a racist system!
No one's free in a racist system!
It's not a black and white thing. That's my point. A lot of it's DSA, Democratic Socialists of America. It's white liberals. Well, I wouldn't even call them liberals. It's white socialists, mostly. And then you have Antifa, And let me show you this. Daily Mail says this. Tyree Nichols protester hurls fireworks at LAPD cruiser while squad cars smashed up in NYC. Thousands of Antifa activists march on Memphis, Portland, and Seattle amid calls for violence. Again, my point with this is don't view it as a black and white thing. This isn't a race thing. It's a political thing. Don't think badly of white people or black people, because that is not even what this is about. This is not your black friend, you know, burning down his own community. This is white socialists in many cases, or Antifa members, which are, you know, again, mixed race, who are doing these things. And they're the ones using an incident that had nothing to do with race, claiming it has to do with race, and then using the race narrative to try to call for their own agendas that existed, whether or not this ever happened. Again, the agenda being the pushing for this socialist reform of the country, the changing of the institutions. The race is just the narrative. That's all it is. Race is just the narrative. This has nothing to do with the reality of race. Yeah, look, Daily Mail says, Antifa has issued a terrifying call to arms as America braces for a night of violence. A shocking protester poster obtained by DailyMail.com shows a group calling upon demonstrators to gather across New York City and, quote, burn it all down. Why are they not being charged with terrorism, calling to burn down New York City? It's because they're being protected by the state. They're being protected by the local government. If Trump supporters made a statement saying that they were going to gather and burn down a city, you guarantee the FBI would be doing pre-dawn raids on every one of their doors. Why are they not doing it against Antifa? It's because they agree with them politically. They want this politically because it ties to a political agenda, one that supports their own visions of what they would also like to achieve, many of them. This is about politics. I'll show you one more. And Fox News has it that George Soros, a top director of George Soros, has frequent Biden house access, according to records. Demonstrating again, the people pushing for these agendas are the ones working very closely with the politicians who are backing these narratives and also, really just benefiting from it, I'd say, and also protecting groups like Antifa, even as they make actual terroristic threats. It says a high-level director at George Soros' Open Society Foundation, who is tied to a group bankrolled by the billionaire and quietly working with President Biden's administration on policy, has close access to the White House record show. And folks, I'm going to go more into a few things. My point being, don't just believe the narratives. Don't just follow the narratives. The narratives oftentimes have very little to do with reality. The narratives are usually trying to manipulate you emotionally in different ways. If any of you understand the history of communism, I'd urge you to look into kind of the history of what they call agitation propaganda. The idea being they need to drum up hatred. They need to drum up social discord. They need to, for example, do their propaganda videos, you know, trying to convince people that the landlord is the problem. That the kulak, the wealthy peasant, is the problem. That some, you know, group of people within the society is responsible for all the problems they face. And that in order to basically fix the society, they need to eliminate a group of people. And, of course, in the process of doing that, the Communist Party says, only we can do this. Elect us and we will fix this problem for you. They then go and eliminate that group of people, and then in the process of doing it, need to root out the systemic problems caused by that group of people, which then means instituting communist or socialist reform within the society. That is the way it has happened over and over and over again. So I would, again, urge everybody, don't follow the narratives. Don't be blinded by the narratives. Don't hate your neighbor. Don't hate people because of their race. This has nothing to do with any of that, as far as I'm concerned. It's just a narrative. All right, folks, I'm going to go into some other things. First, though, so I'm going to, after the, there's two things I want to go into after the jump to Epic TV, which they'll probably give me a strike for if I show them on YouTube. So we'll go to Epic TV before that. Trump is announcing Trump has begun campaigning for 2024. I want to explain why that matters. The main thing, in my opinion, being that this ties into the narrative battle. Like him or hate him, you know, Trump is very good at kind of calling out the left on all the problems that a lot of people will not call them out on. This ties into basically the social arguments we have. There are certain battleground topics that are kind of the agreed upon battleground topics, and there's a whole lot of no-go topics. The no-go topics are usually the ones that break the narratives. The no-go topics are usually the ones that nobody wants to talk about, and even the personal attacks tie into those. Trump oftentimes focuses very heavily on the no-go topics and relies on personal attacks. And so he tends to break the narratives. A lot of people think he's unpresidential or uncouth because of that. But when it comes to the, think what you will. What I'm looking at more than politics is actually public debate. When it comes to the narrative battle, this is I think the most important area to discuss. I want to explain what Trump is doing right now and what his campaign launch means with that. Also, after the jump, I want to talk about Pfizer and their undercover video that Project Veritas caught of one of their scientists talking about how they're discussing intentionally mutating COVID-19 and then creating new vaccines based on the mutations they themselves have manufactured. It's bizarre stuff, and Pfizer did come out with a statement on it. Before we jump over, though, actually something important. So Epoch Times actually published an article by the founder of Falun Gong, Li Hongzhi. And this is important for a couple reasons. I do hope people can read this, but I'll explain why I think it's important. Basically, most of you know, Epoch Times was founded by people who fled the Chinese Communist Party, people who escaped China mainly because of religious persecution. Ironically, Epoch Times, I think if we weren't hated politically, we'd be considered like one of the most, I don't know, like minority. We'd probably get awards because we're a company literally started by persecuted minorities. You know, we're a company started by people, many of whom are here on amnesty because they escaped religious persecution. You know, we have people who work here who witnessed the Tiananmen Square massacre. We have people who work here who've been tortured under the Chinese Communist Party for their religious beliefs. People who've suffered horrible, horrible human rights abuses and came here to a country that they're not from originally and started a media to try to tell people the truth of what was happening in China. You know, that's the story of Epoch Times. And I think over time, have really tried to do a lot here to uphold the local values, uphold the traditions of the United States, and frankly, love America in ways that I think, unfortunately, not many Americans understand these days. They see what America represents. They see what America represents to the world, and they know to cherish what a lot of people here no longer know to cherish because they know what it's like when you don't have that. The problem Epoch Times faces, though, is when other media want to attack us, they attack the religion of the people who started the Epoch Times. They can't find narratives where they try to criticize our reporting. They can't criticize us based on facts. So what do? They attack the religion of Falun Gong. They attack Falun Dafa. And by doing so, a lot of times they take the propaganda from the Chinese Communist Party and just rehash it. They're spreading lies. And by maligning, using Falun Gong or the religion of Falun Gong as basically the narrative of attacking Epoch Times, they're repeating propaganda that's being used to institute a genocide in China. 100 million people being tortured, killed, and harvested for their organs as we speak. And you have New York Times, The Atlantic, BuzzFeed, I think Morning Joe just did a thing on it just a couple days ago, using the lies of a communist system, narratives being used for genocide in order to attack what is nothing more than a business competitor to them. I think this has created other problems as well. I mean, I've been pretty straightforward. I personally practice Falun Gong. It's my religion. I think you all know that I also get along with pastors and priests, and I tend to get along with most religious people. I don't preach my religion ever. In fact, I think probably the opposite. I think I probably bring on more Christians to talk about their religion than anything. I'm very good friends with many Christian pastors. I deeply respect their religion. I deeply respect traditional values in general. and, you know, I will fight for your right to believe. The problem, though, that I think happens is because, like myself, most Falun Gong practitioners are not trying to, like, get other people. We're not trying to convert people or whatever. We don't really care that much. But the problem we have with that is when we don't talk about what Falun Gong actually believes, the entire narrative of it is being controlled by these leftist organizations, by the Chinese Communist Party, and now by just about every institution, from major news outlets to nonprofit, like NGOs, to even Wikipedia, defaming us. And the problem we have with that is that the defamation they're using is the narratives being used to justify a genocide. The narratives they're using are what are being used to justify a genocide. And if people here start believing these fake narratives, I mean, I don't think it's that far off that I could face that type of persecution here. I don't think it's that far off that if people start believing what New York Times is saying or believe what Wikipedia says, lies about Falun Gong, I don't think it's far off they would throw me in a prison and torture me just like they do in China, using the same narratives. And I think for people who even want to research what Falun Gong is, it becomes very difficult. Because where do you go? People typically don't want to read another religion, so they're not going to go read the actual books. They're going to go to Wikipedia, or they're going to do a Google search, and then they're going to find the only information they're getting is the fake information from the Chinese Communist Party that is being repeated by all the major news outlets. And so Epoch Times did something important. They actually allowed Li Hongzhi, the founder of Falun Gong, to publish an article on the website. And I think this really shows the general worldview, or at least part of it, at least, of what Falun Gong represents. Something that I don't believe is trying to convert people, but something that is kind of showing, I think, the belief in returning to tradition and the belief in, for people, the kind of the idea of what it means to be human, I guess. You know, we personally believe the purpose is to return to heaven. And we believe a lot of that's based on morality. We generally believe that other religions can save people too. We don't believe we're like the only way. And so I do hope people can read this article because it clarifies what Falun Gong is. And for those of you wondering what I believe, wondering what the founders of Epoch Times believe, or wondering just what Falun Gong is, because I think people don't know, this article will give you a good idea of it. I do recommend it, and please help us. Help us tell other people too, because again, we're being attacked. We're being attacked and we're being maligned. And it's hard for people to even know what Falun Gong even is as we're being attacked because of the way that the internet and information is being controlled. Again, that article is on the Epoch Times website. I encourage you all to read it. Let me know what you think. All right, folks, that said, I appreciate all of you. And again, I think you know that I do generally respect most religions and oftentimes have pastors on my show and so on anyways. Folks, let's jump over to Epoch TV. I want to talk about, again, the Pfizer videos and also Trump's 2024 campaign and what he's going on, because, again, ties it very deeply into, I think, the narrative battle. Before we jump over, though, let me show you a quick video. This is from American Thought Leaders. They had an Alvin Liu, who said, how schools are weaponizing inclusion, empathy, and social-emotional learning to indoctrinate children. Let me show this trailer, then we'll jump over to Epoch TV.
My great-grandfather ran from communism. The people that dragged him out of his little bakery shop and beat him weren't soldiers. They were college kids, the Red Guard. And I see that that's what they're creating now with a lot of these kids.
After seeing the destructive impact that progressive policies were having in California, Alvin Liu packed up and relocated to the Midwest. But in Indiana, he saw the same ideology taking hold.
So I realized that if I didn't try to at least share my story, do something, that I can't complain because I grew up in a time where I might be able to do something about it.
Today, Liu is the president of Courage is a Habit, which creates resources for parents to protect their kids from ideological indoctrination masquerading as education.
When you weaponize parents' kindness against them to guilt them, to emotionally blackmail them so that they give up control of their kids, there's no way that you're the good guy.
This is American Thought Leaders, and I'm Yanya Kelek.
Again, folks, that's on American Thought Leaders on Epoch TV. I encourage you to watch it. It's a good interview. That's, let's jump over to Epic TV exclusively. Then we'll go into Trump's new, he's actually starting his campaign now. And also the Pfizer video, which I cannot show you on YouTube because they actually deleted the YouTube video for it. Join us in Epic TV. We'll talk about this now. Folks, thank you so much for being here. Those of you curious about it, I'm drinking actually Japanese sencha tea today. All right, folks. Epic Times had this story. Let me show you first.